When Christians worship anything or anyone besides God, that's idolatry. Whether it's the Virgin Mary or some saint or some icon or angels, it is idolatry. No matter how sincere a heart might be, they are meant to honor God, maybe. Maybe it's a desire to honor God. But such practices are false worship, and they're strictly forbidden in Scriptures.
Today on Seeds of Kamema, Lance Cook will continue his verse-by-verse studies in the letter of 1 Corinthians with a look at chapter 10, where the Apostle Paul offers his readers, as well as for you and I, a clear insight on God's divine warnings concerning the many ways we can forfeit our Christian liberty and likewise tarnish our Christian testimony when we abuse our freedoms. And the example Paul uses is when the children of Israel fell in the days of Moses, when they did not take heed to God's warnings. So with this look at 1 Corinthians 10, here's Lance on today's broadcast of Seeds of Commitment.
Paul begins to close his discussion of Christian liberty. As we move in to this particular chapter, Paul gives an example of another group that experienced incredible liberty, yet they abused it. The nation of Israel, the one that, of course, was in bondage for 400 years, they had been liberated, they had been set free, yet their sin of unbelief, their lack of faith, kept them from inheriting the promised land. Those people failed their race, is basically what he's going to say. They were not disciplined, they were not determined, they didn't have that resolve. They, of course, developed wrong motives and wrong hearts, abusing their liberty, becoming disqualified from that race. So after using himself as a good example in chapter 9, Paul is going to use the nation of Israel as a bad example in chapter 10. Let's pick up in verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses, in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food. And all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. And that rock was Christ. So he says to the church in Corinth, remember your history. The cloud, the pillar of fire. Remember that time in that season when Israel began to experience their liberty. Remember that provision. Remember that time where God guided them by providing the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. This is decisive evidence that God was their God. He was their people. They had every reason to feel secure and act secure. They had it made in the shade, you see. He goes on to say, you remember that. You remember that season when they were first liberated. God was absolutely in it. You remember when they passed through the sea, he would say, the miracle of deliverance further enforces his desire to save and to lead them, to liberate them. You remember that particular miracle at the Red Sea. Now, much of Israel's history, of course, is an analogy or a picture or an illustration of the relationship God offers us. Passover, of course, speaks of our salvation. Paul covered that in chapter 5. But the passing of the Red Sea and the being baptized into Moses, this, of course, is another illustration. After a few years of favored treatment because of Joseph, Israel, of course, found themselves enslaved into Egypt. Under subjection to foreign kings and to pagans, they would spend 400 years being abused. Rigorous labor building the supply cities of the pharaohs. But as we see, the 10 plagues came. The Lord brought that liberation. They, of course, were able to flee. They came to the edge of the Red Sea. And, of course, the Lord opened up that water. They were able to walk through on dry land. And the Lord closed up that Red Sea upon the Philistine armies, of course, that were chasing them. But the Lord was guiding them. The Lord was miraculously and supernaturally in all of this. He was their liberator. This is very important to understand. That pillar of fire by night, that cloud by day, the opening of the Red Sea is all a testimony to God being in their liberation. He didn't just liberate them. He continued to lead them and guide them and miraculously open doors for them in that season of liberation. There they were, as Paul would say, baptized into Moses. Now, of course, baptism always speaks of identification. What is it that he's saying here? Well, here it speaks of spiritual identification with Moses. They were baptized in the King James Version. It says unto Moses, and that's a better translation. Not into, but unto. The Israelites were baptized unto Moses in the sense that they identified with him as the Lord's appointed leader over them as they followed him across that Red Sea. Now, of course, this becomes an illustration to the church today, a picture today of our being baptized into Jesus Christ. As we look at Romans chapter 6 again, we understand that the believer is identifying with Jesus once we come to the water and we say, hey, I'm going to go under. I'm identifying with his death. And of course, as I come up, I'm going to identify with the resurrected life. And that's somewhat of a clear picture of all of that. For the believer, we look back at that time as well and we say, well, yeah, we were born into this world. And Egypt, of course, is a picture of this world. And all the way back to the time of Adam, I am connected to this world. But there I am born into bondage to this world under Satan, just like the nation of Israel was in bondage in Egypt under Pharaoh. Now I have this incredible opportunity to be liberated, to be free. Just as God came and supernaturally stepped in and assisted them to liberate them, so too God has stepped in for me as a believer and offered his son to supernaturally liberate me. I am of the dirt. You are of the dirt. We are born subject to the wrath of God in that fallen state, in that sinful state with that sinful nature. We are in bondage in that natural state. But God stepped in and he offered us that liberation. And by faith, we can believe and accept. And when I do that now, as the nation of Israel put faith and trust in Moses to lead them out of the bondage, so too I am putting now and identifying with Jesus Christ to lead me out of bondage as well and into the new life, the liberated life, the new spiritual life as I identify with the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the power that that brings me. And so when he died, I died. When he arose, I arose. As Paul would say there, Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. No longer I who live, but Christ who lives within me. And that's the new life. As they were bound to Moses, we are bound to Christ. As they were disciples unto Moses, we are now disciples unto Christ. And so there's a lesson to learn there from their history. Remember the history and the nation of Israel and the liberation that they, of course, experienced. And remember how they abused that. That's definitely one thing. But obviously, the church would have, you know, heard the story and been reminded of the liberty again that they had and the desire for God to lead them and assist them in their season of liberty. And it says in verse 3 as well, and they all ate the same spiritual food. Again, when he says spiritual food, you know, we sometimes think it's this, you know, spiritual as in, you know, just spiritual. But it was supernaturally provided is the idea. The manna, of course, that came down, the Hebrew word for manna meant what is it when God provided the manna? I'm sure that's what they said. What is this stuff? Everywhere we look every morning, this white kind of dewy stuff, and he wants us to go out and make food out of this stuff, make whatever. You've heard all the jokes, so I won't use them, but, you know, the manicotti and all that stuff. But the whole idea is God provided that. And then there was, of course, the quail that God sent in Exodus chapter 16. They were longing for meat. And the Lord, of course, sent that meat until They were so sick of quail that they didn't, you know what to do. But this manna, this again, it all this points to Jesus, and it bears, I think, examination and you know, development as you go through these kind of studies. But you know, the manna always speaks of the bread, that main staple, pointing to the bread of life, Jesus Christ. Jesus said in John chapter 6, verse 35, "I am the bread of life, and whoever comes to me shall never hunger. Whoever he is, I will by no means cast out." But the manna there pictures Jesus in so many ways. It settled in the evening, pictures Jesus' birth at night. It pictures the darkness of sin in the world as well, in which he was sent. It's very small, which speaks of Christ's humility as a servant. It was a white, bright white looking substance as well. It speaks of his holiness, his purity, and sinlessness. Manna only sustained life for the Jews, though. Jesus gives life to the whole world. Jews, of course, ate the manna daily, but eventually they would die. But when we receive Jesus Christ, man, we will live forever. Manna, of course, cost the Father nothing to give. But the giving of the Son, the bread of life, cost God everything. Water from the rock as well. So we have the supernatural supply of God in the area of spiritual food, the manna, the quail, and then water from a rock. Two times it's mentioned, of course. Exodus 17, they're at Rephidim before Sinai. That's the first time they were thirsty and just fresh out of the bondage and fresh into the wilderness experience. And they began to murmur and complain, you know, "We're thirsty, man. We are just thirsty." And Moses kind of, you know, he scratched his head about these people. And the Lord at that particular time said, "Moses, get your rod, go over and, you know, strike that rock." And he did, and the water came out and whatnot. But then again, there would be that second time in Numbers chapter 20. There at Kadesh, right after Mount Sinai experience, where he would receive the law. And this time the people began to complain again. This time they were really complaining. And this time the Lord says, "Now get your rod, go over to the rock, but speak to the rock." And rather than speak to the rock, we all know that story if you've studied the Bible at all. Moses went over and he beat the rock two times. God had a problem with that, we know, because of course that rock becomes a picture. It was a symbol of Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ, of course, the one that is going to bring forth spiritual life to all, as that water would sustain physical life. Jesus, of course, brings spiritual life. He was only smitten once, and so he was misrepresented there, and that is the very act that kept Moses from ever entering into the promised land. The Lord, of course, dealt with him that way on that particular act of disobedience. But Paul here brings this up in order to show what was happening within the hearts of these people that had been liberated. What did they do with their liberty? How did they handle their season of liberty? These people that God had liberated, this people that God was leading and guiding, these people that God was blessing, the soles of their shoes never wore out, never had to go to the market every morning, man. Got a little bland, a lot of, you know, creativity with all the gals cooking and whatnot. But they were absolutely supernaturally being tended to. How did they handle that? How did they handle their season of liberty? Well, the people, of course, realized after a while that there were some parts of Egypt that they missed. No doubt that began to spread through the camp. Man, I miss leeks and onions. Whatever you like, garlic. You like garlic? Put yourself right there, man. If you're a garlic, you Italianos, you started missing garlic, you see. Whatever it was that you longed for in Egypt, your favorite, you know, little deli, your favorite little food, your favorite little beverage, whatever it was, man, they started to flesh out. They started to miss that stuff and to cry out and say that we long for that stuff. But when they cried out for the melons and the fruits, the leeks and the garlics and whatnot, all of that spoke of self-gratification. Gratify my flesh, you see. At that particular time in their season of liberty, they began to falter. Now, of course, that rock, Paul says here in verse 4, which is worthy of noting, was Christ. Again, just showing that Jesus was there with them in their season of liberty as well. Now, the Old Testament believers did not have the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, but even during the Exodus, they had the sustaining presence of the pre-existing Messiah. They had the pre-incarnate Christ caring for and fulfilling their every need. The point of all of these affirmations is to recount the privileges. Recount those privileges of Israel, the resources of their deliverance, and the great liberty that God had brought to them. Yet, verse 5, or but, in verse 5, with most of them, God was not pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now, these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. In this incredible season of liberty, it simply says God was not pleased with most of them. Kadesh Barnea was one of those very interesting places in Numbers chapter 13. You don't need to turn there. I'm going to summarize for the sake of time. But in that particular chapter, there were these 12 spies that were sent into the land, and as they returned after those 40 days, they came back to Moses and Aaron, to the congregation there at Kadesh, and they brought back word to the whole congregation. So everybody was waiting. They're right on the edge of the land. Man, we've got to go over into the city of industry on the other side of these hills. We're going to stay right here in the city of La Habra Heights. We're not going over. We're going to send 12 of us. And they're going to go over for 40 days. We're going to camp out. We're going to pray for them. We're going to be wondering about them and talking about them. But they're going to go over and check it out. That land that God has promised to us, the nation of Israel. And there's not just several hundred of them. There's almost 3 million of them. So big old spread of people. Miles and miles long. All of a sudden, word comes back. Hey, they're coming. Up over Hacienda Boulevard. Come down into the heights. And all of a sudden, they stop and Moses and Aaron and the elder board, you see, they all get together and they say, hey, what's it like? Well, 10 of the spies begin to say, oh, you know, hold on. You can't believe the food. You can't believe all of the wonderful land. It truly flows with milk and honey, with all of its fruit. But then they went on to say, hey, the people of the land are as giants. These guys are huge. Now, in those days, you're talking, Goliath was 9'6". We look at Shaq and go, mammoth. Well, we don't talk about Shaq anymore, but when he used to be in our town, we used to say Shaq was a big guy. But these are huge guys, they came back and said. And the cities, you can't believe the cities. They're huge, walled cities, double-walled cities. And when we got around them, we looked like little grasshoppers. 10 of the spies looked at this land that God had given to the nation of Israel and said, no, when they were on the border. No. Well, that's okay with you, but a couple of guys who had strong faith, they came up and said, well, you know, we really don't see it the same way. Caleb quieted the people for Moses, said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are able to take over that land. He had no problem stepping up, stepping out in faith. The problem, though, was that the people listened to the 10 that used this season of liberty, this new liberty of theirs. And they basically said, you know what? We're going to turn left, even though God is saying go straight. And out of that 2.5 to 3 million people, they would march around in the wilderness, not going in. And every single one of them would die in that wilderness except for 2. That's a strong example. God's judgment is found in Numbers chapter 14. He says, the carcasses of you who have murmured against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who are numbered, according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. That was the judgment. That's a challenge. The corpses of those with whom God was not pleased were strewn all over the wilderness. All Israel had been graciously blessed. They'd been liberated, sustained. But in that race, in that test of obedience and service, most of them were disqualified. They missed and abused their freedom and their blessing. In self-centeredness and self-will, they tried to live on the edge of their liberty, and they fell into temptation, they fell into sin, overconfidence, and they did not finish well. They had not brought their bodies under control, as Paul said we must do in chapter 9, verse 27. Instead, they had indulged their every desires and lusts and cravings. A controlled body is useful to the Lord, an indulged one is not. The Christian who controls his body and his lifestyle is going to be qualified to serve the Lord. The one who indulges his body, is careless in his lifestyle, will end up disqualified. And so, from 20 years old and up, dead. The only two leaders going in, Joshua and Caleb, from that original group of leadership. Verse 6. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after the things as they also lusted. Again, let me read verse 5. We read that, but verse 5 again. But most of them God was not pleased. Then he says, now these things become our examples to the intent that we should not lust. The idea is this is not just history. God was not pleased, but we've got to learn from this. These are practical illustrations, practical lessons, practical examples for us. We have been liberated, Church of Corinth. Again, baptized into Jesus, sustained by the bread of life. God guiding us, providing for us, protecting us, fighting for us. Everything about their journey was humanly impossible. Everything about our journey of this, you know, walk with the Lord is humanly impossible. It takes God to save us and sustain us in this new life of liberty. With great privileges comes great responsibility. We have the Old Testament examples. We have New Testament examples. We have the Spirit of God within us. We have the church about us. The greater the blessing, the greater the responsibility, Church. So he says in verse 6 at the latter part, do not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Don't desire things that are out of the will of God. Much of what they desired was perfectly legitimate, but it was not part of the plan of God. And they began to lust after it. Lust is like a fire. The more you feed it, the hotter it gets, the more it demands. The four sins that really disqualified them, idolatry, sexual immorality, verse 9, tempting God or trying God, and then verse 10, complaining. So we'll hit those. In verse 7, do not become idolaters. But when Christians worship anything or anyone besides God, that's idolatry. Whether it's the Virgin Mary or some saint or some icon or angels, it is idolatry. No matter how sincere a heart might be, they are meant to honor God, maybe. Maybe it's a desire to honor God. But such practices are false worship, and they're strictly forbidden in Scriptures. First commandment that God gave Moses was, you shall not have any other gods before me. There's only one God, and only one God is to be worshipped.
Well, these kinds of examples that are recorded in the Bible are given for us so that we might take heed to the lessons that they teach us and as well as the warnings, as we have been learning today on Seeds of Commitment with Lance Cook. Now, if you'd like to receive this study on audio cassette or compact disc, we have it available in both of those formats. Make sure you mention tape number 4602-25 when you correspond with us. Again, that tape number you'll need to mention is 4602-25. And to reach us by phone, the number is 714-441-2845. We accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover Card. Simply call us at 714-441-2845. If you prefer to write to us, the address is Seeds of Commitment, 1370 South Euclid Street, La Habra, California, 90631. And if you're writing a check to us, please make sure you make it payable to Seeds of Commitment Ministry. To know more about our ministry and as well as get all the contact information, simply go to our website. The address is www.seedsofcommitment.org. That's www.seedsofcommitment.org. Then make it a point to join with Lance Cook for more insights and our studies in 1 Corinthians. Until then, may God bless you as you stay committed to the Word of God.